$26.57.
May it please the court. My name is Erin Perkins, and I represent the appellant, Ras Green, in his appeal from the denial of his petition for writ of habeas corpus under Section 2254. The district court in this case did not dismiss Mr. Green's petition on the merits of the petition. However, the court instead denied the petition as untimely. In this case, however, Mr. Green is entitled to equitable tolling of the statute of limitations set forth in Section 2254-44-D1. Based on his mental condition and the fact that he is mentally retarded and has difficulty understanding situations, including understanding the import of his waiver of his right to a trial by jury by pleading in this case.
Yes. Well, we just held last week that equitable tolling is permissible in cases like this. So if you go back, then you have the district judge to rule on the merits. But I'm just troubled on the merits. You know, that you've argued that merits have been argued, but maybe they're not properly before us right now. Mm-hmm. How do you conduct a hearing in 2004 to determine competency of someone who pled guilty in 14 years ago?
Well, first, I would say that there is at least some evidence of Mr. Green's mental state at the time when he was tried, although this was not a competency hearing.
Well, he wasn't tried, he pled guilty.
No, I'm sorry, he pled. I misspoke, excuse me. However, and also this kind of situation where somebody is mentally retarded is generally not the kind of situation that changes over time. Somebody has that deficiency from before they're 18, as I believe the state has pointed out, and this tends to last throughout their lifetime. So there wouldn't necessarily...
Well, not everybody that has a low IQ is incapable of being competent to stand trial, just in their own sense, and do that sort of thing. And the competency was never challenged. There was a motion regarding the Miranda, whether you understood as Miranda rights, but his competency was never challenged. The judge in state court observed him and never said, hey, wait a minute, we might have somebody who's incompetent here. And he answered questions at a state's hearing that's comparable to our Rule 11. And so how do you turn back the clock here now and go back on the merits and determine what his state was 14 years ago?
Well, first, I understand what Your Honor is saying. I think the one thing that we need to point out is that part of our claim is that Mr. Green's counsel was ineffective constitutionally for not raising this at trial. The court would have to look back with the help of an expert. Expert witnesses who are able to evaluate the type of mental disability that this petitioner, this appellant has, and present it in an evidentiary hearing. He is entitled to that evidentiary hearing. He's never had it. It hasn't been.
So we've established that you're entitled to equitable tolling. What will you put on when you get down to the district court?
You would have to put on a psychological expert, somebody who could.
So you go back down and ask for the appointment of psychiatrists, psychologists, and other learned folk to testify to what? That he was competent, incompetent to waive his right to appeal, or incompetent to waive his right to trial by jury? What?
Incompetent to waive his right to trial by jury, and
that would be the basis for the relief you seek.
Yes, that would be. I believe also, at this stage, I think we would also want to call on people familiar with Mr. Green at the time. I understand that the time concerns. However, it's never been checked into. No one knows if there are such witnesses. And
is his lawyer still around? Or did
yes.
anybody check that out? His lawyer still around and available? He's on the bench? He's not available.
Probably rather unlikely that he's going to testify. His client was incompetent when he pled guilty.
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to indicate that I think that it would be possible in this case for somebody to evaluate Mr. Green now and to determine whether or not his psychological condition is something that would have been stable over time and whether it would have shown that he was competent at the time of trial or at the time of his plea, to waive his right to a jury trial.
You wouldn't think that it would have deteriorated over those 14 years?
It's difficult to know that without having the opportunity to actually hear the evidence below. And in this situation, we do believe that Mr. Green is entitled to an evidentiary hearing below, and I would like to reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you.
Were you appointed, sir?
Excuse me. Yes, I was. Pardon me. Does the court have any more questions now?
No.
Okay, thank you.
That was the question. You don't think this is a case of equitable tolling?
No, and...
Interesting.
Well,
isn't this a case where the district judge said equitable tolling doesn't apply, so we have to send it back and say it can apply, but does it here?
Not necessarily, and there are several reasons why. As your honors are aware, there's conflicting authority within this circuit with respect to whether equitable tolling is even available categorically. And your honor, in questioning my opponent this morning, had suggested that last week you issued an opinion that said that equitable tolling is unequivocally available. And I presume that you're referring to the Gildin opinion.
Yes.
Gildin did discuss equitable tolling in terms of habeas cases. Gildin, however, and as did another case that I cited in a Rule 28J letter that I filed earlier this week, Johnson, which was issued, I think, at the end of August. But there are two other cases from this jurisdiction, and those are Madrowski and Nolan. Those are cited in my original brief, in which this court explicitly stated that it has not yet decided whether equitable tolling is available under the habeas statute of limitations.
Well, assuming that we believe that we have decided that equitable tolling is available, isn't then the question whether it's available in this case? And that's something the district court has to consider.
It's something I think that this court can reject on the record in this case, and there is no need to remand this. I think the facts of this case and the record would establish that petitioner is not entitled to equitable tolling.
Well, he said he didn't get the, actually receive the order that denied his first post-conviction motion until 2002.
I think the record flatly contradicts that, Your Honor. The statement that petitioner didn't receive the appellate court's decision was actually an inference that's been drawn from an affidavit that was prepared by the inmate law clerk who assisted petitioner in the habeas petition and was filing a motion seeking leave to file a late petition for leave to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court. That law clerk, Vincent Bogan, indicated that he reviewed petitioner's file and in the file found the document, that being the decision from the Illinois Appellate Court with respect to the first post-conviction petition. If you read carefully the affidavit and the documents that petitioner has filed, Bogan states, and I would point out without any reason to believe, there's no reason to give any credence to Bogan's conclusions, but Bogan states that petitioner did not understand the significance of the decision of the Illinois Appellate Court or that petitioner had an opportunity or a right to file a petition for leave to appeal in that case. So it's not as if the record firmly establishes that petitioner didn't receive the first decision in the first post-conviction case. Not only that,
petitioner filed a second post-conviction petition in which an Apprendi claim was raised, and that wasn't appealed. It was denied on the merits by the Cook County Circuit Judge. That decision outlines the procedural history in this case, and that decision was mailed to petitioner prior to any of these proceedings starting. So the record, far from establishing the petitioner didn't know what was going on with respect to his first appeal, establishes that he did know and had information with respect to that. But I'd like to get back to the reason why I don't think equitable tolling, that there's a need for an evidentiary hearing in the trial court with respect to equitable tolling in this case. I'll rely on my brief with respect to the arguments about the availability.
Well, there may not be a need for an evidentiary hearing on it, but maybe the judge has to consider whether it is applicable here. And maybe he can do that without an evidentiary hearing.
I think that this court can also decide on the record without remanding it to the district court that petitioner is not entitled to equitable tolling. If this court thinks that the record might establish that petitioner is entitled to equitable tolling, I think you could remand it to the district court and should for the district court's determination, but you can deny the request on the merits. And the point that I'd like to bring to the court's attention is that when petitioner filed his first post-conviction petition in the Illinois Circuit Court and he appealed the denial of that to the Illinois Appellate Court, one of his claims was that his trial counsel was ineffective for failing to raise an issue with respect to his competency to stand trial. And that was based upon petitioner's argument that the testimony of a psychiatrist that had been presented, or a psychologist that had been presented in a motion to suppress, established that petitioner's IQ was 65. Petitioner's argument was that counsel should have raised an issue with respect to fitness. The Illinois Appellate Court made a detailed review, and that's at, that is in the supplemental appendix, in the first document in the supplemental appendix. The Illinois Appellate Court went through a detailed analysis of the record in this case, discussing the evidence that had been presented at the suppression hearing, the fact that the detectives who had interviewed defendant with respect to this murder had indicated that petitioner comprehended what was going on and in fact had read and made corrections to his written confession, that the state's attorney in the case had indicated that petitioner had understood what was going on, that petitioner made a coherent statement in elocution during his plea proceedings, and ultimately the Illinois Appellate Court made a factual finding that petitioner, that there was no bona fide doubt as to petitioner's fitness to stand trial, and therefore trial counsel was not ineffective. This court must give deference to that factual finding by the state court. Petitioner is obligated to overcome that finding by clear and convincing evidence. He has presented none. The only evidence that he has presented with respect to his fitness has to do with the affidavit by Bogan, which is tailored toward the aspect of fitness in the context of equitable tolling. There's no indication, however, that petitioner's mental status has changed whatsoever since the time of trial at which the Illinois court system deemed petitioner to be fit. Petitioner complains that he didn't get an evidentiary hearing with respect to his fitness claim on the Illinois post-conviction proceeding, that first proceeding. I would point out, though, that the Illinois Appellate Court in its decision lists the standards for getting an evidentiary hearing in Illinois. You don't get an evidentiary hearing in a post-conviction case unless you provide sufficient evidence for the court to think that an evidentiary hearing would be worthwhile. You have to make a substantial showing of the deprivation of a constitutional right. Petitioner had counsel who represented him. The state filed a motion to dismiss the post-conviction petition, claiming that petitioner didn't present enough evidence to warrant an evidentiary hearing, and the appellate court affirmed. Petitioner's obligation was to attach affidavits or evidence or point to something that would have entitled him to an evidentiary hearing. He didn't do that. What that means in the federal court system is this, that the habeas statute requires that petitioner cannot present evidence in the federal court that was not presented in the state court that he could have presented with due diligence. He didn't present that type of evidence with due diligence in the state post-conviction proceedings. It's not good enough for petitioners to come to this court and say, well, I asked for an evidentiary hearing and they wouldn't give me one. Illinois has standards to give an evidentiary hearing. Petitioner didn't meet those standards. Because there's no bona fide doubt as to petitioner's fitness to stand trial, as I argued in my brief, a petitioner who is mentally retarded or suffers from some other type of mental defect, assuming that equitable tolling is available, certainly can attempt to establish that there was some type of circumstance that prevented him from filing. But my argument, and the state's argument in this case, is that a petitioner who has been deemed competent, an otherwise competent petitioner who suffers from a mental disease or a mental defect, is in fact not entitled to equitable tolling. There is nothing in this record to suggest that petitioner, whose IQ was deemed to be 65, did not have the ability to file the pleadings in this case. The state court system deems him to be competent to stand trial. He's competent to stand trial. He would have been competent to represent himself at trial, and he's surely competent to be held to the statute of limitations for the federal habeas petition. I would be happy to answer any further questions that this court might have. Thank you.
I just want to point out a few things and clarify a few things. I don't believe that the state court actually did find Mr. Green competent to stand trial. The issue was just never decided. And under a recent case decided by the Illinois Appellate Court, People v. Shanklin, exactly the same kind of evidence presented about Mr. Green's case was determined to have a bona fide doubt, to create a bona fide doubt as to competency. It would seem then, under that standard, perhaps the Illinois Supreme Court was not correct when it decided Mr. Green's case and decided that there was not that there was no bona fide doubt. Just to go back to your question about what would happen in an evidentiary hearing, we do understand and concede that it would be difficult, and it would have been better if at the time different inquiries had been made. However, it's not the case here. But still, there are people that could be called, including his Mr. Green's counsel, the state's attorney, the law clerk, Mr. Bogan, people who can give evidence as to his state of mind at the time and who can assist in showing the court whether he was competent to stand trial. Furthermore, on remand, the district court could consider whether equitable tolling should even apply in this case. So there are a variety of different things that could be decided and should be decided in an evidentiary hearing. Therefore, we would request, Your Honor, that you do exactly that, vacate the judgment and remand this case for an evidentiary hearing.
Thank you, Ms. Brennan. Thank you for your fine representation. And